Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, April 11th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the minimum wage increase is on Governor Dayton's desk, the medical marijuana bill gets another hearing, and the Republican budget plan in Washington provides campaign fodder for both parties. Governor Dayton is poised to sign a minimum wage increase into law on Monday. The governor's signature is the last action needed for the bill that would raise the hourly wage to $9.50 an hour by 2016. The Minnesota House passed the bill by a vote of 71-60 yesterday after a few hours of contentious debate. It'll be the first increase in the state's minimum wage since 2005, as Tom Scheck reports.
The minimum wage debate in the House centered mostly around the impact on the state's overall economy. Supporters like DFL Representative David Bly of Northfield say increasing the wage will improve the conditions of hundreds of thousands of workers.
A minimum wage increase is a way of government coming in and saying we have to make the playing field better for people, better for everyone. So we will see it as a good thing in our economy as we go forward.
But Republican critics said the increase will result in job cuts. Republican Representative Mark Anderson of Lakeshore said resort owners in his central Minnesota district told him they'd cut back on employees because the wage will go up.
I'm a free market guy. I've employed over 30 people in one business, and I'm just starting another one right now. For the government to get involved in my decisions for what I'm paying people, it bothers me.
The proposal would raise the minimum wage for large employers in steps from the current $6.15 an hour to $9.50 an hour by 2016. The deal also includes a 90-day training wage of $7.75 an hour for teen workers. Future increases would be tied to inflation starting in 2018. But the commissioner of the State Department of Labor and Industry would be able to prevent inflationary increases if there's an economic downturn. DFL Representative Joe Radinovich of Crosby said indexing the wage is good for workers.
Every part of business expense goes up year to year. The cost of labor should be no different. It provides a safeguard for those families so that they don't have to wait around for the legislature to have the right configuration to acknowledge the difficulties that they're having and to pass an appropriate minimum wage increase.
Senate Democrats resisted indexing the wage for months but agreed to it on Monday, just 3 days after House Democrats agreed to finance a new $90 million Senate office building. That sequence of events did not go unnoticed on the House floor.
You guys traded small business owners' money for a Senate office building across the street. Live with it. Own it.
Republican Representative Pat Garofalo of Farmington suggested House DFL leaders agreed to the Senate's push for a new office building in exchange for the inflation mechanism in the minimum wage bill.
Sometimes there are trade-offs in horse trading that has to happen, but make no mistake about it, what's happening today, members and members of the public. What you are seeing today is a bargain among thieves. Small business owners having money taken from them to pay for the Senate's new Senate office building across the street.
House DFL leaders say there's no link between the minimum wage deal and the Senate office building and that the timing is just a coincidence. And Democrats said Republicans were trying to change the subject to the office building because they know raising the minimum wage is popular with many Minnesotans. DFL Representative Tim Mahoney of St. Paul voted for the bill.
I don't think this is a trade-off between small businesses and a Senate chamber. I think this is a trade-off of helping people live a better life by making a decent enough living that they don't have to have the state pay for their housing, that they don't have to have the federal government pay for their food stamps.
The House and Senate will begin their Easter Passover break on Friday. They are expected to focus on a spending bill, a tax relief bill, and a public works construction bill when they return. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The effort to legalize medical marijuana in Minnesota gained some new life at the Capitol. A state Senate panel held a hearing on the previously dormant bill yesterday. The revived attention came just a couple of days after DFL Governor Mark Dayton accused lawmakers of hiding behind their desks on the controversial issue. Tim Pugmire has more.
Governor Dayton has taken a lot of heat from medical marijuana supporters who accused him of blocking their bill. That's why Dayton challenged legislators this week to stop avoiding the issue. DFL Senator Scott Dibble of Minneapolis said the governor's comment was the reason his bill got its first hearing.
I viewed the remark as an invitation to the legislature to start grappling with the policy debate. And so that's what we're doing.
The Senate Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee heard testimony for and against the bill for more than 2 hours, but delayed a vote until after lawmakers take their Easter Passover break. The hearing was similar to one that a House panel held earlier in the session. Several supporters of medical marijuana, including patients and the parents of sick children, shared stories about their personal challenges. Angie Weaver of Hibbing said she wants to be able to get medical marijuana legally for her daughter, who suffers from epilepsy.
I believe the people of Minnesota are compassionate enough and smart enough to put policies into place that allow people with debilitating conditions like my daughter to have access to the medicine they need. We are not criminals. We're law-abiding citizens. We are just parents that are asking for you to help our daughter.
Kim Kelsey of Excelsior said she believes medical marijuana will help control her son's seizures.
To be honest, medical cannabis is the closest thing that we have had to a potential cure or miracle that we've heard or seen and read about in a very long time.
The bill would allow the use of marijuana for the treatment of many debilitating medical conditions, including cancer, glaucoma, and AIDS. Authorized patients would be able to fill their prescriptions at alternative treatment centers. Senator Dibble said medical marijuana could help thousands of Minnesotans who are living with discomfort and pain.
The alternative is that they go without, continue to endure the only treatments that are available to them through pharmaceuticals, or operate outside of the law at great personal risk, and in so doing support the criminal system and the corruption and violence that goes with that.
But the bill faces big hurdles. Law enforcement groups oppose it, and Governor Dayton has concerns, too. Two of Dayton's commissioners testified against the bill. State Health Commissioner Dr. Ed Ellinger said there are too many risks and unanswered questions with medical marijuana. He said more research is needed on the appropriate use of cannabis along with clinical trials.
We are concerned that Senate File 1641 bypasses this rigorous approach and leaves patients to self-administer powerful chemicals and, in essence, conduct their own experiments.
Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jessen cautioned lawmakers about increasing the availability of an addictive drug. The committee discussion will resume later this month. Dibble said he believes he has the votes to advance the measure, but Republican Senator Julie Rosen of Fairmont said she doesn't like the bill.
Understand what these families are going through, and your heart goes out to them, but we have to make sure that we protect the rest of the state, the residents of the state.
In the House, Republican Representative Pat Garofalo of Farmington offered a medical marijuana amendment this week to a bigger health policy bill, but House leaders delayed action on that bill. DFL Representative Carly Moline of Hibbing postponed a hearing on her medical marijuana bill last month after negotiations with law enforcement on a possible compromise broke down. Moline said she's now waiting to see what the Senate does.
I've been pretty clear that it's important to me to get people help as soon as we can. But we'll just have to see with the time that we have and now going on recess for a week, and when we come back, if there's enough time to move the bill through.
Moline said she would prefer to have the bill go through the committee process than come up as a floor amendment. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The U.S. House has approved a budget plan authored by Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan. The vote yesterday was along party lines, with Minnesota's three House Republicans voting for the measure and the state's five Democrats voting against it. The budget proposes $5.1 trillion in spending cuts in most non-defense parts of the federal budget, including Medicare, over the next decade. It's the fourth such budget the House has considered since 2011, and both parties say it will be an issue in the fall campaign. Brett Neely has more.
This debate wasn't even necessary. Under an agreement reached last winter, spending levels for the next 2 years were already agreed to by Democrats and Republicans. Nothing in the Ryan budget will likely make it into a spending bill. But Republican leaders wanted to pass it as a statement of principle. And Democrats are practically salivating at the lines of attack the Ryan budget will give them on the campaign trail.
Oh, I suspect this will be the real focus of the campaign and election.
8th District Democrat Rick Nolan is facing a well-funded challenge from Republican Stuart Mills. Mills turned down an interview request about the budget, but Nolan is happy to talk about it.
Our country is falling apart and they don't want to invest in it? No, I look forward to that debate with my opponent.
Republicans argue that the budget demonstrates their governing vision if they win control of the Senate in November and the White House in 2016. Still, it means that Republican candidates now face questions about their support for specific parts of the budget that may not be popular with voters. In particular, Ryan proposes giving seniors the option to get a voucher to buy private health insurance rather than go on Medicare. Opinion polls generally show little public support for the proposal. Mike McFadden, one of the GOP candidates who hopes to unseat Senator Al Franken, had this response to a question about whether he backs Ryan's Medicare plan.
I think everything needs to be on the table, whether it's vouchers or other forms to address long-term entitlements.
Another Republican Senate contender, State Senator Julianne Ortman, didn't respond to interview requests. State Senator Tori Westrum is running against 12-term DFL Congressman Colin Peterson in the rural 7th District. When asked what he thought of the budget's estimated $23 billion in cuts to crop insurance and other farm programs, Westrum said he was a supporter of the rural safety net, but didn't say whether he supported the cuts.
We know we can't continue on the path we are going down right now.
Second District Republican Congressman John Klein has seen this before, three times actually, since he's voted for the Ryan budget every year since 2011. He points out that budgets are big picture documents that lay out a vision, while individual spending bills fill in the details.
So because someone supports the budget doesn't mean that they're going to support every single detail in that budget. That's highly unlikely that someone would be supportive of every single thing in a budget.
But that doesn't sit well with 4th District DFL Congresswoman Betty McCollum. She's the only member of the delegation who sits on the Appropriations Committee that writes spending bills, and she's a former member of the Budget Committee. McCollum remembers last summer well when House Republicans sought to write spending bills based on the numbers contained in the 2013 Ryan budget. That process fell apart. Many Republicans refused to vote on bills that cut too deeply into domestic priorities such as transportation.
So it's quite obvious that they can't even lead their own caucus with these, off-the-chart crazy cuts that they make.
McCollum worries that by voting on a partisan budget this year, Republicans are trying to undermine last year's agreement and could set up another potential government shutdown fight later this year. Political analyst Kyle Condick at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics says the budget has become a process used to excite core supporters from both parties. In fact, Democrats have been using the Ryan budget all week to raise money online. Condick says House Republicans haven't seen any political fallout from past budgets and don't expect any this time around either.
The Ryan budget's not going to become law. It's all just kind of posturing when you have divided government.
Still, expect plenty of ads from Democrats about the budget in a few months' time. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
That's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. It's been a long week, and both the legislature and Congress are taking next week off. So I'll be here probably some days, maybe not some other days next week, and we'll see you here then.